a Rick Classic 88.2 with me, Saskia Constantino, and we're going to cross over now to the Netherlands to speak to Tineke Rensen, a former professional sportswoman who competed nationally and internationally representing the Netherlands in whitewater kayaking. She's also an accomplished international speaker, a successful business owner, and a founder of Powerful Business Academy. It's an honor to have you on the program, Tineke. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Saskia, for the beautiful introduction. And I feel honored to be here as well. And
Let's begin with what I'm really wondering is whether you hail from a sporting family. How did it all begin?
Okay, well, that was really not the case. As far as I know, my dad was pretty well doing in soccer, but he was injured on an early age. I don't remember him other than being injured in, on his back. So that was his frustration. He couldn't do sports anymore. And in the family of my mom, we had a professional soccer player. But I think that's about it. So, I don't come from a sporty background, but I just noticed that I loved doing it and that I was good at it. And, that's how I continued.
You obviously didn't begin with whitewater kayaking, I think probably to your mother's relief.
Yeah. Had she known more dangerous situations I've been in, she would have not been that happy.
When one travels around the beautiful Netherlands, one sees calm waters and canals. Is white water kayaking not done in rough waters? So where did you go? Tell us a little about how you made that transition and decision at 37 to do that.
Well, my first sport was always gymnastics. And I had a dream. I wanted to become a national champion in gymnastics. But at an early age, at 12, I realized, hey, if you really want to be good at something, you need other people. And my parents, although they supported me going to the local club, they could not support me going to a bigger, more professional club, which was 20 kilometers further down. So I had to let go of that dream. They didn't allow me to go on my own on my bike, and they were not prepared to drive me three times a week. So I was very disappointed, and I realized I made a commitment at that time, if there's anything you want to achieve, you're out there on your own. You know, we make these subconscious commitments.
Yes.
To ourselves, who will be true, will be in concrete, you know, it's the belief you have. So that was my belief. I then focused on getting better in sports in general, so I started studying sports at university, and at some point during an internship of one of those sports, it was recreational sports games and plays with people, they organized activities in Belgium in the Ardennes, which is the closest thing for us to go to get white water, and it's not very wide and wild, but at least it's a lot better than the canals. So I was, I think, 18 when I entered the rivers for the first time. And after one time, I hated it. I was never going to do it. I nearly drowned. And I thought, this is really not for me.
Wow.
And then, you know, how life steps in and points you into a direction. There were two ladies who were just there as a participant, same as I was, and they said to me, well, why don't you go again, because kayaking was on the plan again later on in the week. I said, no, I've had enough. I was really terrified.
Yes.
And so I was going to walk. And at some time, some point, they somehow, the two of them, made an effort of trying to get me back in the kayak. No idea why. But I eventually didn't want to be a party pooper. I was a proud person. I didn't want to be feeling defeated.
Yes.
That's all part of the sports mentality, of course, the winning mentality.
Yeah.
And so I did go in the water. I was there all by myself because I was the last one entering it. I was so scared, but somehow I started to get the hang of it and started to like it. And after 2 hours, I was on my own the whole trip, which was incredibly bad because it's not safe, but that was the standards back then. This is over 30 years ago.
Yes.
The whole sport evolved a lot in regards to safety, equipment, material, instructions, but not then. But I was hooked. So those two ladies, had they not been there, I would never have been in a kayak again, I suppose.
Very. I see. As we progress in the interview, we'll see. That's a really pivotal moment to explain about having somebody there for you to support you. It's a sport dominated by men.
Yeah.
Is there now a women's division, and how does one break the barriers?
There is a women's division, definitely, but yeah, it's the men. You have various disciplines in whitewater kayaking. You have the slalom,
yes,
which is an Olympic sport. So you will see the people navigating through the gates on a white court, on a whitewater court. I was doing freestyle whitewater kayaking, and that's where you stay at one spot with a big wave, where you enter and you do all kinds of tricks. It's more like gymnastics, but in your kayak. So you do cartwheels, you do somersaults. So my former experience with gymnastics really came in useful, because I could stretch my body a lot. I had good balance. It was just my mind I needed to conquer, because every time I was under the water,
yes,
I never felt comfortable until I flipped that much all the time, and I was 100% sure that I can roll back up. And that's what the freestyle kayaking did to me. You know, before, when we were paddling rivers, you start at A, you finish at B. When I swam, it was awkward. And here it was just like, okay, it's one spot, you get out, you climb back in, you walk up, and you do it again. And so I had to conquer my mind, really, the fear of being underwater.
Is that fear one of the greatest fears, or is it sort of on the same level as flipping? Or is it just a matter of training on how to right yourself?
Well, the fear was that I'm getting stuck in my boat and I drown. I somehow don't manage to get out.
Yes.
That was the fear. It was a matter of training and building confidence that I either will get out or I don't need to get out, because I just turn the boat around and I continue. I roll back up. So it's been a lot of training. But because of that fear, before I entered the freestyle kayaking scene, I became really good in not flipping. So my balance was very well, because I never wanted to flip, because that was So it all helped me to work to that professional level.
Does going slalom give you more control? Or is it better working in a team? Because from my understanding, you can go in pairs as well to do whitewater rafting, kayaking.
Yeah, there is. In German they call it Mannschaft. So it's you go with three.
Yes.
Well, I didn't have such a good experience with team in sports because in my gymnastics time, we always had to enter the competitions in a team of six. And whilst I was always the best of the team, there were not many occasions that we won as a team. So I could win the game, on the match on a personal level, but overall, as a team, we never won. And that really frustrated me. There was nothing else that I could do, I thought. So I choose, because of that reason, for a solo sport. Mm. But it would not have been possible without team. You know, I need people to train me, need people to help me. At a point, I found my former husband. I knew him from the kayaking scene. We trained a lot together, and yes, we needed each other's feedback when we were not in training sessions with the team. So, yeah, you always need other you people. Need, it's not possible. Yes. And I realized as a kid, you need your family. If your parents don't support you, it's not going to work. It's a family effort. Once there is a national champion or a world champion, the whole family has contributed. Otherwise, it's really not possible.
Yes. As I ask you all these questions, I see the parallels between sporting and the business world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a real transition, though, for you, was it? Because you had your own outdoor survival sports company, Umjak Buitensport BV, for many years before.
Yeah, I somehow transitioned from my hobby, whitewater kayaking, into a business, and it was a very organical. I first worked somewhere for another company for 2 years, teaching kayaking, managing the instructors. I was growing within the company, and at some point there was just a boss, and I thought, yeah, but you know, I want to move further, and that was not possible because it was his business. And I then started on my own because I was arrogant and naive. First, I was naive, and I was probably as well arrogant. I thought, you know, I can do so much better. I saw so many things I wanted to improve and change, but I couldn't because it was not my say.
Yes.
And therefore, I started on my own with five kayaks on the rooftop, driving to Belgium, which is about 3-4 hours from the Netherlands, and take people in the weekends. And at some point the group was bigger than five, so I needed to hire a trailer. I needed to take a friend because the groups were too big. And then, you know, every weekend we were playing on the rivers and having a great time. And then people wanted to start mountain biking. I won a prize. I bought mountain bikes. And people wanted to start climbing. So the whole outdoor and survival industry started to evolve. When I started with whitewater kayaking, mountain biking didn't exist. It wasn't there. There were no mountain bikes.
You're not that old.
Yep. Yeah, it's beautiful to be at the beginning of something starting and happening, a new scene.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. A pioneer. You were really a pioneer.
Yep.
And all, I would call them extreme sports.
Yes.
It was... Was it that challenge that was your motivating?
Somehow, apparently, the game with the fear challenged me. Conquering the fear gave me so much more self-confidence. I always was a very, very insecure girl. I was very shy, and being able to overcome something that gave my self-confidence a boost.
Yes.
You always have to look further and have to expand. And some people call it thrill seeking, but yeah, you have to raise the bar to be able to conquer all the time. I had to challenge myself.
It's easy to see the medals, the triumphs, the accolades at the pinnacle, but behind all of that, There is a lot of hard work. And I think that your word is perseverance. What is it that still drives you?
No, it's not an option. sometimes that's not easy because, you know, when I'm the only one in control, that's okay. I can beat myself up as much as I like, but I can't do that with the people around me. That's not always very easy. So, yeah, it's a challenge for me now in business to always find a way. There must be a way. There must be a different way. There must be something I'm not aware of yet.
Yes.
It must be able to, it must be working. That's just my belief.
And is that what really sort of drives you forward, that you have to overcome the obstacles? No is not a word.
Yeah, not possible does not exist in my diary.
Financing is probably one of the greatest challenges that young startups and entrepreneurs have. Someone to believe in the dream that they actually have. What is your advice about collecting those initial euros that are so essential for making it become a reality?
Yeah. Well, there's two ways. There's the never give up. There will always be someone in the end who will pay, and you just need to improve your pitch and improve everything over and over and over again. And at some point, somebody will say yes, because then it's perfect. That's one way. The other way, and that's you will also need money to do that, is to invest in somebody who can help them take the shortcut. Who can help you with your pitch, who can help you introduce to investors, who can vouch for you, angel.
An angel investor.
Yeah, well, that's already somebody who's investing. But if you would go to, there are people who help you getting in front of investors. They're intermediate.
Yes.
It's pretty sensible to check some of those companies out and to pay for their service, which is often not that much, because their big model is a percentage of the investment that you will get. So I would really advise that as a shortcut and not going to do it the hard way.
Where would you suggest that people go to do that? So, for example, we're sitting on, you know, a little island here. Well, not so little. We're the third largest island in the Mediterranean. We're part of the EU. Where do you think some young Cypriot who has an idea, who has a business plan, who's got everything ready, where are they going to find an angel investor? Where would you suggest as a sort of first port of call?
I know people in my country who you pay, I think it's 1,500 euros, and then they will help you, and they make sure you have an 80% success of raising your capital, and they get a fee of that, but you do need to pay
up front.
So they help you with the pitch up front.
Yes.
And they do the introductions, and they need to know all about you because they need to vouch for you. I would Google, because I'm pretty sure those companies also operate internationally. I know, for example, a business who does this internationally in Europe with tech startups. And they combine the tech startup with the big corporate organizations and have them in. There's also a lot of incubators. Those are programs or accelerators. Those are programs that startups can join.
Yes.
And they prepare you. And often those are for free because, once you get an investment, they get the reward. So those would definitely be things I would consider. See if you can enter some kind of accelerator or incubator.
Mm. How did you develop a woman's blueprint to success? And why is it that you focused on women in particular?
Okay, first the last question. I eventually started to focus on women because I have always been working with men in my sports business. And when I sold that 22 years later, I more started to open my eyes, and then I came across many women in business, and I saw that the way they do business was so much different. I saw things which I thought, whoa, that's weak. I was seeing the world, I was really black and white.
Yes.
I thought, why don't you position yourself better? Why don't you sell? Why don't you do this? No. Why don't you have focus? Why do you get distracted? I had all these making wrong things about women in business. So I thought, oh, let's work with men. It's much easier. They're fast, they're quick, they can handle feedback, they don't cry. But at some point, I realized, but what women do is very, very well, because they are not launching or selling something if they cannot 100% vouch for it. They would not launch an iPhone 1 if they knew there would be an iPhone 2 on the shelf. They wouldn't do that. They would go directly for the iPhone 2, because it's not for the money that women do business. Money is always a side effect for women. It's hardly ever, I can't say never,
yes,
their main driver. And I'm not saying money is bad. I love money, and it makes the world go round.
Yes.
Lot of things are possible because of money.
It buys freedom, I always say.
Yeah, but so I noticed when women start to create bigger businesses, the whole atmosphere in the way business is being done, which is very masculine all over the world, we women need to change often a lot to become successful in business, because we need to learn things that men are good at naturally, and we can learn everything. But we also have some really good things, is that we want to have everybody involved. We want to make sure everybody's happy, that it's perfectly organized. So we are not strategizing things because money is the end goal. So that's basically my main driver. I saw, wow, women can learn so much from what I've learned about working in a men's arena, how they become successful. So what if I can teach them some things they do to become successful, but do that in a feminine way? Because we should not be men in skirts. If we play that game, it's not working with men, because then, you know, they don't respect us. We should play the women game in business, like we need to play that at home with our husbands, and then things are going to change. That's my big mission. I really want to make sure that we have more femininity in the business world.
You
had another question.
Yes.
The first question. What was that?
The first one was about the developing the blueprint to success, and those eight major aspects.
Yeah.
I thought, this is it. You really nailed it with those. Maybe you'd like
Thank
to elaborate and just go through them briefly.
Well, the reason why I created the blueprint for business women's success is because I noticed all these areas were areas I had to work on with the women I was coaching. So it starts with mindset. Mindset is about your attitude, and that's all, of course, my professional athlete background, sports background, but it's also financial mindset, because we're never in it for the money. Money is often lacking in our businesses. So I help them focus on the business. I help them see what emotions around money are blocking them. Then the next thing is planning. We need to start strategizing, create, first of all, what are your core values? Because those are your drivers of your existence. They always need to match in whatever you do. So your goals need to, you need to be able in your business to match your core values. If not, you're not happy in what you do.
Yes.
Burnouts, bad jobs, they all happen when your core values are not being met. So once you know those, we start to create goals, long-term goals, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, because that's often what is difficult for women.
Yes.
Then we create action plans, marketing plans, sales plans, financial plans. So that's all the planning. Once we have that done, they start to feel more confident. There is a strategy. So now we need to position you. Who are you? What are you good at? And women find that difficult because they think positioning is bragging, but it has to be done. And they always underestimate themselves. They position themselves too low, too...
I want to touch on that. Why does that happen? Why does that happen?
We are used to be modest. It's in our genes that we're... I think it's in our upbringing as well.
I was going to ask, is it a part of the upbringing, you know, maybe if you've had a brother rather than a sister, you know, the brother has had different experiences and obviously a different relationship with the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somehow we always think being modest is a virtue. We do not like to shout off the roofs how good we are.
Mm.
And men do that. And we condone that in men. We really have opinions about it. I did study how women do business, and this was one of the questions. What do you dislike about a man in business? And on number one is the bragging and their ego. And then one of the questions is, what's lacking in your business? Guess what? It's selling and positioning.
Yes.
So the thing, that's how I made the decision. There's so much we can learn from each other. There's so much we can learn from what men do in business. But we also need what we do very well.
Another very important factor that you actually touched on when we were talking about your kayaking was working in a team. And this is obviously a major factor, having a good team around you. So many business people whom I speak to say it is so difficult. So it doesn't matter whether they're restaurant owners or they're running a media station. It's really difficult to have a team where people are like-minded. Obviously, they don't think like the boss, otherwise they would be the boss. You have to encourage them to work, and yet they don't think in that way. So it's very difficult for an entrepreneur to understand the mindset of the employee.
Yep, it is. I always say we have to step down the ladder to be able to communicate on their level and to set reasonable goals. We often have a different work ethic. We have a different mentality. We know how we want things. And I just had a conversation with about this topic with my assistant, because we got frustrated with one another because I thought she could cope with more or do more, and she thought, yeah, but the way you communicate, in the end she said that, the way you communicated with me, it was not clear. So communication is, the most important. Matching each other's expectations, being really clear about that.
Yes.
Is it realistic? And also, we really need to step down and need to compliment the team for the efforts, because initially, all of them start with a good intention. None of them start with, okay, now I'm just here to make the money. No, they all want to feel... recognize, they want to thrive, they want to feel that they contribute. But once that need is not being met, then they just start to do their work, and then it becomes a job. and then the friction starts. So I think for us business owners, and I see that all the time, and women do this so much better, and that's why I love working with women. But still, the expectations we have, and that was also the friction between me and my assistant. She just started, so it's a new one. And she said to me, you know, I don't know if I can do this. And I thought, huh? Have I misjudged you? You must be able to do this. But I didn't see until she confronted me with that my instructions were not clear enough, because I work with other people and they understand those instructions.
Yes. Yes.
But everybody is different.
But I think one of the main messages that I'm hearing from this is actually that you were able to say, I didn't make it clear. There are very few bosses who are prepared to step back and say, I must be held accountable for that. That was my mistake. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You know, I think this comes down to men are insecure too, but they never show it. And admitting that you've done something wrong is very difficult when your business is your vehicle to create security and worthiness.
Mm.
And this might be something that I'm just making this up, to be honest, but not in a way that I don't think it's true.
Yes.
So I have not researched this, but this may well be the reason. And it's not how you create a good team. You create a good team and be humble. You are always the one who's responsible for the team effort, and you cannot blame people. You have to look at what's my part in this.
I was interested to see that you said, I only work with ambitious women. And I was wondering what constitutes an ambitious woman for you, and what's the difference between being ambitious and being successful?
I think being ambitious automatically creates a success when you have the right skills.
Mm.
Attitude is not something you can learn. Attitude is something you have. You can improve it, you can polish it, you can work on it, but it is something you have. And ambitious is an attitude. So when you are ambitious and you want to achieve things, you let that be your driver, you will have to make other things work. So you will have to be open to feedback from, for example, me as being their business mentor. They will have to be receptive to learning new skills. They will have to be, 'cause being ambitious, it's not, hey, look at me, how good I am, and I'm walking the mile, and I drag you all along, and if you can't, well, then you can't. That's not the way women do it. They want everybody to make the finish line.
Yes.
But they, it's
I understand.
Okay, the reason why I don't want to work with ambitious women, they always come up with excuses. They're not capable of reflect enough.
Yes.
It's always somebody else's
fault.
Kids.
Yes.
Yeah, and I hate the excuse of the kids, because I had my business already before my kids came, and it's never been a reason for me not to also focus on my business.
You preempted my next question, which was about that balance. You've got two daughters, you know, they've passed their teenage years. How do you make that balance? And let's get down to the practicalities. If one of them is, or even worse, if you've got two, and they're having a crisis, hopefully not at the same time, but, you know, they need you.
Yeah.
How does one say, I can't? Do you say it to the children who need you, or do you say it to the business and make a plan?
Both. And I've always been fluid and flexible with that. yeah, I can't say my kids never get the attention. I can't say my business never gets the attention and the other way around. So I had to weigh what's important for them and what can I offer. And it's the same with the business. What's important now and what am I prepared to give? And how does this affect the kids or how does this affect the business? I always felt that I was doing either short when I was with the kids. It was really easy before we had the cell phones because, you know, I was just, yeah.
Yes, I understand.
That's when I already did business. There was nobody disturbing me when I was at home with the kids. I was working from home 2 days and I had my kids around. And 3 days they went to the daycare because my ex-husband, he worked for a company and they did not allow him to work a day less in the week because that was what was our ideal plan. And that was what we agreed on when we married and wanted to have kids. So then I did not want to bring my kids 4 days to the daycare. So I decided that I stay at home 2 days. But the good thing was that it forced me into scaling my business. I had to start hiring people.
Yes.
Because I was clever enough to see, hey, now I can't manage it all on my own anymore because when I'm with the kids, I want to be with the kids. But I also want my business to continue. So that's when I started hiring, and that's one of the best things I've been forced into. It was not a decision I made easily and lightly, but once I flipped that around, I thought, wow, there's so much possibilities when you work with a team, and you can scale so much bigger when you can let go of, I need to be there all the time.
Yes. But then you need to have that good team that you were speaking about.
That's not easy.
How important is it to be international? And have you found that Corona has actually led to a greater demand for your mentoring service?
I like how you ask me 2-3 questions at a time. The first one was
About how you know it's yes. I think it's one of my greatest skills because you see that the one sort of has an impact on the other. So COVID has really had an impact.
It has.
It helped to go international?
And
then, you know, all your life has somehow turned around and is very much online. I know in the Netherlands that even though I think you're still one of the most free societies and everyone's expected to behave like adults, maybe a lockdown is coming that way because the cases are getting worse. This online work, does it create new opportunities?
So many. For me, COVID has been a blessing. It forced me into restructuring my business. Mm. I already was operating international, but I was traveling international. I was flying everywhere, and I stopped flying. It's now completely accepted to have online meetings. And before, I also wanted to do that, but often felt guilty that I expected people to do online because although we have a small country, having a 1-hour meeting with somebody often means half a day for me because it's 1 hour drive up, it's 1 hour drive down,
yes,
it's an hour meeting, and then there's not calculating the traffic. So it can be 4 hours for one meeting. And I always thought, what a waste of time.
Yes.
Why we have all the resources to do this online. Why can't we step out of this rat race that we need to see each other in person? And I am really happy that this is now so completely accepted. There has to be a balance, though, because you know, I also have I also run a business network for business women in my country who do business internationally and who have really proper businesses. So they don't have a me, myself, and I business. Many women choose to do everything on their own, which is fine, but I like to work with the women who want to grow bigger.
Yes.
And we have a group, and I facilitate it, and we meet once a month. And we also had to do that online. And 2 weeks ago was the first time we met live again, and I could not be happier. I did not realize that I missed the atmosphere of being surrounded by people instead of having an off. So it is.
Yes.
It needs to be there both. But it's not, you know, it's not an automatic choice to jump in the car or in a plane to talk to people anymore. And I love that.
Yes, yes.
I really love that. It gave me, I work a lot less now. And my business is becoming more successful. Yes, there is more, more women have problems transforming their business. I did. I have everything online now. My people work remote, my programs are remote, my clients work remote. So I have an office here in the Netherlands where we can perfectly keep 3-4 meter distance if that is what we want.
Yes.
And I always invite people to come here if they want to, if they live in the country. But now more people finally decide to value their time more and respect their time more, and not jump in because it was a rat race. It was.
Yes, yes. And of course, as you said, it wastes an awful lot of time. So one can be more productive and one can grow faster.
Yeah.
The role, finally, of a mentor is often, I think, misconstrued and misunderstood. Tell us about that role and what you offer.
Well, what I see is my role as a mentor is a lot more than a mentor does. A mentor, in my opinion, is someone who has experience and just listens to you and connects you with the network, comes up with ideas. I also coach, which is ask you the questions you're not asking yourself, and then you need to give the answers you don't want to give yourself, but they are there. And once you're prepared to do that, then you can continue. And I train. I teach people skills. I teach them new skills. So I think I don't like the word business coach because, in my opinion, the world is full of business coaches who cannot claim that name, in my opinion. And I might offend a lot of people here. I have a lot of discussions about this. But how can you say you're a business coach if you never had a business yourself?
Yes.
If you go and do a training and then call yourself a coach, but not a business coach. But anyway, so that's not what I want to be compared with. So that's why I say I'm a business accelerator, I'm a business mentor. I'm always about helping women to grow, to scale and grow their business. And one of that is helping them from getting rid of the me, myself, and I business to building your team and start delegating and outsourcing. But it can also be that, hey, we have to work more structured with long-time goals.
Yes.
With creating a business plan, with maybe raising funds. And then I will connect them with the people in my network who will then help them further. So what I offer is long-term relationships with business women who really want to grow, and I work with them for at least half a year because I don't believe in a one-hour coaching session.
No.
They feel inspired, but nothing's going to change.
It's been a privilege speaking to you. Thank you so much for very valuable insight into this world. And I hope that women here in Cyprus actually do reach out to you. It's so easy to do now across social media, and that you find a good balance.
Well, yeah, I hope they do. My name is Tineke Rensen. I'm all over social media. So, it's easy to connect with me on Facebook or on LinkedIn. And, if you're ambitious and you want to move forward, I definitely am interested to talk to you. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much once again for being on the program. It's been a privilege. Thank you.
Well, and thank you so much for the invitation. I really am grateful for what you do and offering this platform to people and offering this for your country.
It's a pleasure. It's my job. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
So, but you still can have the credit.
Thank you so much, Seneca.